Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the San Diego Housing Commission meeting of July 13th, 2018. Let the record show that we have a quorum here of commissioners present. Let me just go over a couple of rules of engagement, if we could, before we get started this morning. If you want to address an item that's on the agenda, you must fill out a speaker slip. Please hand that over here to our Housing Commission Secretary, Angie Rizzotti. If you want to speak in favor of an item, please fill out a golden slip. If you want to speak against an item, please fill out a pink slip. If you want to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, please fill out a white speaker slip on that. I know that we were expecting a large number of people here today, so we are live streaming the video of this meeting in the overflow room on the fourth floor lunchroom down the hall. Members of the public in this overflow room will have the opportunity to listen and view the meeting and to provide public comment if they wish to do so. Housing Commission staff are stationed at that room to collect speaker slips and provide them over to Ms. Rizzotti, and also to escort speakers here into the boardroom. If there's a large group wishing to speak on an item, the chair will accommodate folks. We will limit speaking to a maximum of 3 minutes. Depending upon how many people we have on an item, I may restrict it a little bit further than that. At this time, we have one person wishing to address the commission on a non-agenda item, and that is Ms. Joyce Sonata. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Nice to be welcomed. Good morning, everyone. I wanted to say a few things today. First of all, I like to always start out by thanking everyone, the whole San Diego Housing Commission, for everything you're doing for us. Please keep it up, because, boy, do we need you now. So just know how much you're appreciated. The other thing I wanted to say is that I attended the Planning Commission meeting, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, when they had their housing workshop. And so I'm going to sort of repeat what I said there, basically. And that is that I've chosen these three P's sort of as part of my ideas around housing. And the three P's are preserving, preventing, and powering. And, of course, preserving is so critical right now. It's kind of the baby that I'm holding in my arms, because, hey, if it's built, let's do what we can to keep it. So I'm really excited that there is a focus, a growing focus on preservation. So it's really exciting. And then number two is preventing. And I'm really excited that the Housing Commission does have the prevention item in their budget. I wish there was more money there, but I'm excited for the where it's going. And I think that we need to really put more focus on that, because we want to prevent. We don't want more homelessness. And, of course, that's part of the reason we want preservation, because the two are intricately related. And then these all, you know, come together as one. The last one I'm calling powering. And that's for us tenants, us people that are looking for housing. We really need everyone to help us. And I think that's where the prevention is coming in, and the preserving. Because if people knew ahead of time what's going to happen with the housing they do have, that's empowering. And that really is key to preventing them from being homeless, and just to empower people. That's really something that I think perhaps we also need to put more focus on. So those are my three P's: preserving, preventing, and powering. And then I also want to thank the Housing Commission. I haven't been able to check it yet. I don't have a computer to see if it went live, but I understand that the new portal on the internet was supposed to go live on July 2nd, so I'm hoping it went live, and I'm looking forward this weekend to checking it out at the library. So I think I didn't go over today, so thank you so much. I appreciate you all listening.
Thank you, Ms. Sunyata. Appreciate that. All right, let's move on with the item. Before we move on, Mr. Mariello, what item are you here to speak on? Item 102. Thank you. All right, commissioners, any commissioner comments before proceeding on with the agenda today? Seeing none, I'll move on to the report from the President and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Gentry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've got a very brief report today, three quick items. First two are positive notes. I'd like to point out that on July the 9th, the Housing Commission received their annual Standard & Poor's Global rating. We are a AA rating, which is the second highest we can be. And we are the highest that S&P will rate a local housing agency. And they won't rate any higher than that simply because 80% of our funding comes from Washington, D.C., and I don't think I have to explain any further than that. But so we get the highest rating of any organization, any agency in this business. Quite pleased with that. And that is the fifth consecutive time that we've had this rating. Reflects great work not only by our financial people, but our program people, and indeed the agency throughout. So staff, thank you very much, and board as well. Second positive note is, as you may have seen through some positive TV coverage on Channel 10, also on July the 9th, on Monday, the Housing Commission Achievement Academy had a Power of One program graduation ceremony. And Power of One is a year-long program that assists single parents who receive federal rental assistance and have children up to age 16. This is the second year we've done that. We will take up to 50 participants each year. You see some good photos up there. And the participants receive access to career and financial planning resources, matched savings, and just a lot of support activity both from staff and, more importantly than that, peer-to-peer. There were 49 of the 50 who completed the program this year, and there were, and I'll point out just in passing that 77% of the participants increased their income. 63% were either placed in a job or enrolled in vocational training or were in college. Five participants graduated from vocational training or college. And I'll point out that nine of the 49 participants were parents with kids at the Monarch School, which is a school, as you know, for the homeless here in town. So we're very pleased with this. We're pleased with the positive coverage. And I've been promised by a UT reporter that there's going to be broader coverage of our Achievement Academy and our whole attempts to help residents empower themselves in the newspaper this weekend, probably either tomorrow or Sunday. Those are the two very positive items I wanted to remark on. And third one, not so positive, but we'll live with it. As you all saw this week, Debbie Ruane, our executive VP and chief strategy officer, submitted a resignation. She's going to be leaving the end of September. I want the board and the public to know I did my best to keep her, but it shows how much influence I have. She's going back to the private sector. She's got wonderful opportunities ahead of her. She's going to do extremely well. I would praise her even more, except that Debbie is today en route to a vacation in the wine country of France, so I'm not going to say too many good things about her today. But we will have a nice going-away ceremony in September, and I wanted to publicly express my regret about losing Debbie and our love and affection for her. We're going to miss her. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Gentry. Indeed, we will. And it is a great opportunity for her to – I, too, tried to convince her to stay, believe it or not, and but she's focused in on her next chapter in her career path. We'll talk about Debbie later on in another meeting in the future. About the Achievement Academy, it was nice to have that kind of recognition locally. You know, in Washington, D.C., they've taken note of what this agency is doing in being able to help our tenants, and it's nice that we have some local recognition for that work as well. Okay, with that, let's move on to the approval of the minutes of the meeting of June 15th. Are there any corrections or deletions to those minutes? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve. Commissioner Sardi has a motion. Benvenuto a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Minutes of June 15th are approved as presented. Okay. We have no consent items on the agenda today, commissioners, but we will move on to the first action item, which is an action to amend Appendix A of the Housing Commission HP0101. Council, would you like to lead off on this?
Sure. Item 100 is amendment of Appendix A to the existing Housing Commission conflict of interest policy. By law, we are required to review the policy every 2 years. In that review, it was determined that the Housing Commission has added two positions over the past 2 years, which positions require certain disclosures for Form 700 filings. And so the amendment is to add those two positions to Appendix A, which sets forth the various designations.
Thank you very much. Pretty straightforward, commissioners, adding a couple of designations to the existing policy. Any questions? I have no speaker slips on this item. As a result, I'll entertain a motion to approve as presented. Thank you, Commissioner Davis. Second, Commissioner Hubbard. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. The conflict of interest policy has been updated. Okay, let's go on to item 101. Item 101, I believe, is going to be covered by Ms. Kessler. Welcome. Nice to have you here. This item, folks, by the way, comes on the heels of Ms. Sunyata's comments about preservation, and this is what this project's all about, 200 units in the downtown area. Ms. Kessler, take it away.
Good morning. Good morning. Item before you today is a request for approval to recommend that the Housing Authority take the actions as outlined in the report to extend affordability and preserve 201 units of affordable housing that will remain restricted at or below 80% of the area median income. This is a unique opportunity to ensure that low-income individuals and households are able to remain in affordable housing. The actions include authorizing a forgivable loan for $2.75 million to Island Inn LP, to impose affordability restrictions through December 31st, 2027, authorize the President and CEO of the Housing Commission or designee to execute documents in a form as approved by General Counsel, authorize the President and CEO of the Housing Commission or designee to change funding sources not to increase beyond those approved in the actions before you today. The project is an existing 201-unit multifamily development located at 202 Island Avenue in the Marina District. The property was originally constructed in 1990 and offers a reception desk, lobby, on-site laundry, on-site maintenance, storage, parking, and parking to the residents. Affordable restrictions previously agreed upon between the owner and the former redevelopment agency expired at the end of 2017. The owners agreed not to issue state-required noticing of expiring restrictions to current tenants while in negotiations with the Housing Commission to extend the affordability term for up to an additional 10 years or through December 31st, 2027. The redevelopment agency covenants required units to be set aside for individuals and households earning between up to 120% of area median income. Approval of the forgivable loan will require units to be set aside for individuals and households earning up to 80% of the area median income. The forgivable loan amounts to a subsidy of approximately $13,600 per unit in total. This would allow low-income individuals and households to remain in restricted affordable housing through December of 2027. The requested actions are being brought forward in an effort to preserve affordability of 201 units. This slide shows photos of the exterior of the property. This slide shows some typical unit interiors. And this slide shows the well-maintained lobby, laundry room, and fitness room at the property. That concludes the presentation. I'm available to answer any questions along with representatives from the owners. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kessler. Can this be categorized then as a 10-year extension on the affordability?
Correct.
Okay. And there's a change between the percentage of the AMI of on what's currently existed to what we're proposing here. Is there not?
Correct. So okay. This will restrict units up to 80% of area median income versus the 120 that the redevelopment agency agreement set for.
And so assuming that there's tenants in there that are at the 120, what happens to them?
I don't believe that they will have to move. There are some concessions for relocation, but there will be restrictions in place to ensure affordability.
Okay, maybe I'll ask
And
that.
Minimal impact.
Okay, and these are inclusionary funds that we're using here?
Correct.
Okay, very good. Commissioners, any other questions before I invite the public to speak on this? Commissioner Benvenuto?
Thank you. I'm increasingly pleased to see more of an eye toward preservation as we start to pivot some of our resources toward that as priority. 10 years is going to fly very quickly, which makes me a little bit sad. But how is the commission kind of planning for next steps? I know that we're going to blink and we're going to be at year 8 and it's going to be time to kind of reconsider this.
Mr. Gentry?
Let me answer that a little obliquely. This is a first for us, and I want to compliment staff on coming up with a very creative, innovative approach, using a little bit of money to buy 10 more years. Basically, this is another one of those SROs we could have lost 6-7 months ago, and we're extending it another 10 years, and we may well use the same approach with other opportunities. This is, if you look at the subsidy per unit of $13,000, we think that's a money well spent, and we have faith that in the next 10 years we will deal with a preservation opportunity here again. But this is, absent this, it would have been very difficult keeping this property even the 10 years.
Okay. Mr. Greenberg, do you wish to address the commission on any of this? Okay. I assume that you're in agreement with what you and staff have worked out on this item? Okay. Commissioners, any other questions? Mr. Davis?
Yes, I'm curious. For the preservation, is there going to be examination on the infrastructure like plumbing and electrical to be sure that everything is handled inside?
There's not any renovations proposed at this time.
So evidently then the plumbing and the electrical is all up to date and okay internally and in the building and everything. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, commissioners? Pretty straightforward. It is a unique deal. It is a one that, it's beneficial to be able to provide affordable housing in an area in the urban core where it's highly needed. If there's no other questions, I have no other public speakers on this item. Yes, Ms. Signa. Your name is Joy Sunyata. You just did that. And so, Ms. Sunyata, you're in favor of it. And so we know that you don't wish to speak, but we appreciate you supporting that. No, I didn't directly, but I did indicate that you had mentioned it earlier today. Thank you. Thank you for correcting me and getting me on task. It is a big deal indeed. Okay. Commissioners, yes, ma'am. Hearing no other testimony on this item, I'll entertain a motion to approve this item as presented. Commissioner Davis, Commissioner Surdy on the second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Mr. Greenberg, thank you for bringing this to our attention. Appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Commissioners, let's move on to the next action item on today's agenda. This is to approve a one-year agreement with two-year options to extend with Family Health Centers of San Diego to operate City of San Diego's Housing Navigation Center at 1401. Imperial Avenue. And Ms. Jones, we'll be presenting here, and please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Tassin, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and Mr. Spath. I'm Deborah Fischel Falk, Vice President of Procurement and Compliance, and with me is Lisa Jones, Vice President of Homeless Housing Innovations. We will be presenting the item for the operations of the City of San Diego's proposed new housing navigation center. In his State of the City address in January, Mayor Kevin Faulkner introduced several new city initiatives to address the homelessness crisis in the city of San Diego, including a new housing navigation center. The Housing Commission administers the agreements for the City of San Diego's Homeless Shelters and Services Programs through a Memorandum of Understanding that first took effect July 1, 2010. The Housing Commission is a key partner in supporting the City's vision for the Housing Navigation Center to serve as an entry point of the coordinated entry system, as well as identify alternative housing interventions outside of coordinated entry when appropriate. The center is designed to provide core services to address housing crisis and help clients access a range of mainstream services that impact housing stability. The center will play a key role in the city's continued development of an integrated homeless crisis response system and will be the anchor in the city's balanced approach in assisting homeless residents by connecting them to a care network with temporary relief from the streets, supporting them with services and workforce training, and transitioning households into housing that best meets their needs. The new Housing Navigation Center will be located at 1401 Imperial Avenue. The city determined that this facility was well suited to meet the requirements of the proposed Housing Navigation Center. The San Diego City Council passed Resolution Number R311521, January 29, 2018, authorizing the mayor or designee on behalf of the city to complete the acquisition of this property for the specific purpose of utilizing it for the proposed Housing Navigation Center. The city has also committed $300,000 for tenant improvements for the new center. The selected provider will enter into a no-cost lease with the city for the site location and will carry out all tenant improvements as approved by the Housing Commission and the city. The operator of the new Housing Navigation Center was identified through a formal competitive procurement process. The Housing Commission, in collaboration with the city, issued a request for proposals for operation of the new Housing Navigation Center on February 28th of this year. The RFP was posted and made available for download on both the Housing Commission and City Planet Bid website portals. More than 1,200 notifications were sent through the Planet Bid system to potential proposers. Advertisements were also placed in the San Diego Union Tribune. A pre-proposal meeting was held March 14th so that potential proposers could walk through the site. Representatives from 8 companies and not-for-profit agencies attended. The RFP closed April 26th with 5 proposals being received. A source selection committee evaluated, scored, and ranked the responses and is recommending a contract be awarded to Family Health Centers of San Diego. If the Housing Authority approves, the contract will be executed within 2 weeks, and it would be anticipated that the center would be operational later this fall.
Good morning. Family Health Centers of San Diego has a long history of working in Southern California. They're one of the largest nonprofit organizations in the area, providing primary care, dental, pediatric, mental health, and other services to more than 155,000 individuals a year. Family Health Centers provides a variety of health-related services for the community, and they have partnered with homeless services agencies to serve persons experiencing homelessness in our city for many years. In 1988, they were awarded federal funding to provide medical services to persons experiencing homelessness and have been a primary point of medical care for the homeless community ever since. They have more than 3 decades of experience working with the homeless population and participating in community-wide planning efforts related to homeless services and care coordination. Family Health Centers provides the on-site clinic at Connections Housing Downtown. They also partner with San Diego Rescue Mission, PATH, and Veterans Village of San Diego in the provision of medical and mental health care for homeless persons through the establishment of on-site clinics at these locations, as well as provide medical care and case management services to the Alpha Project and Veterans Village of San Diego temporary bridge shelters. Family Health Center's Healthcare for the Homeless program uses a multidisciplinary approach to working with homeless patients. By minimizing barriers and maximizing individualized support to individuals, they can address the patient's medical and behavioral health needs, including both mental health and substance use issues. In addition, they assist clients in applying for public programs, developing and accomplishing goals, and linking clients to other critical services. In addition to the clinics and community-based locations, street-based case managers identify persons experiencing homelessness and provide assisted referrals to needed services. They work to identify any barriers that may be encountered and develop individualized, targeted care plans to help overcome these barriers. Their goal is to get homeless individuals connected to needed services and benefits. As part of the city's and the Housing Commission's efforts to support the work of the Regional Task Force on the Homeless to create a homeless crisis response system, a housing navigation center was envisioned to serve as an entry point into the coordinated entry system. The Housing Navigation Center is designed to effectively coordinate services and resources for persons experiencing homelessness and will provide on-site intake, assessment, triage, and referrals for permanent and longer-term housing opportunities. Through the center, family health centers will help individuals experiencing homelessness identify immediate housing solutions, provide crisis management, access mainstream benefits that are important to addressing issues impacting housing stability, and work with partnering agencies to connect individuals with permanent housing and supportive service programs. The center will align with Housing First principles with low barriers to entry and operations, and will participate in the coordinated entry system and the coordinated street-based outreach plan. The center will be open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. to noon. During operational hours, restrooms and washing stations, mail, telephone, and messaging services will be accessible to the clients. Skilled staff, including peer mentors, housing navigators, care coordinators, and outreach workers, will be on site to effectively engage and work with clients. There is a full outreach component with outreach workers and peer support staff to bring services to clients where they are. Clients are not required to go to the center to access services. Outreach teams from the center, as well as the three bridge shelters, will work together to coordinate and deliver services on the street where people are located. Prevention and diversion services will be present to ensure clients have access to light support that may be the difference between needing emergency shelter or staying permanently housed. Prevention helps individuals and families who are at imminent risk of losing their housing to maintain their current home. Diversion helps families avoid entering the shelter system by quickly identifying alternative permanent housing options with appropriate supports. Intake and assessment workers will start the process for engaging new clients and starting them on the path of the coordinated entry system when appropriate. Housing-focused case management services, housing navigators, will be a guide and support to clients until permanent housing is located. Along with being housing-focused, housing navigators can connect clients to needed services that may help increase the chance of long-term stability and improve quality of life. Center staff will coordinate with eligibility workers for county, state, and federal programs, as well as other services, social service agencies, to enroll clients in much-needed services either at the center or wherever the clients are located. Once the center is operational, family health centers will be responsible to manage the property. They will appoint a construction manager to oversee the tenant improvements at the site and act as a liaison with the Housing Commission. They will perform tenant improvements, including compliance with the American with Disabilities Act, as necessary. As part of standard program operations, family health centers will maintain a secure and healthy environment for delivery of all services, provide operating supplies, site control, prompt maintenance and repairs, utilities, security, janitorial services, waste removal, and other center-related items. Provide secure entry exits for clients and others to be monitored by center staff and report all suspected criminal activity to law enforcement. In addition, Family Health Centers is responsible for developing a fire escape emergency plan for approval by the Fire Marshal and the Housing Commission and complying with fire marshal inspections and recertifications. Designating a point of contact who is available at all times to address issues that may arise at the center and coordinate security issues with the San Diego Police Department. Providing written drug and alcohol-free policy for staff that is posted at the center at all times. Maintaining the center at all times in an orderly and vermin-free condition. Making efforts to ensure clients do not queue, litter, or loiter within a one-block radius of the facility, and maintaining a clean environment at the site that is free of litter, debris, and graffiti. Fostering the understanding that the Navigation Center is consistently housing-focused and is not simply a drop-in facility will be key to the center's success. Though subsidized permanent housing resources are not directly connected to the center, it will have an essential role in connecting persons to the coordinated entry system and to other potential interventions outside of the coordinated entry. As part of the administration of the contract, the Housing Commission will review reporting metrics on a monthly basis to determine if the center is meeting the expectation that all clients are connected to a housing navigator within 90 days of being assessed, and all clients working with a housing navigator become housing ready within 60 days of housing navigator assignment. These are important outcomes in our coordinated entry system process and will help ensure that clients are connected to a valuable permanent housing resource to stably house the homeless population. In addition to these reporting metrics, center staff and outreach teams will collect important information on demographics such as age, income, length of time homeless, disability, veteran status, and the service needs of the population. Reporting will include, but is not limited to, a number of participants placed into shelter, number of connections to resources, average time to housing placement, and number of participants placed into permanent or longer-term housing. The City and the Housing Commission are committed to the successful operation of the Housing Navigation Center. Having a positive impact on the surrounding community also is a commitment that is shared by multiple city departments and local homeless service providers. Family Health Centers of San Diego has appointed the President and Chief Executive Officer as the designated point of contact for the Housing Commission for all contract and programmatic related communications. Family Health Centers is also committed to creating a community advisory group to meet on a monthly basis and provide an ongoing opportunity for community members to share their feedback or express concerns. In addition, the Housing Commission will be providing a dedicated phone line for community members to utilize if they have issues that have not been addressed or resolved by the contractor in a timely manner. The San Diego Police Department will routinely patrol the surrounding area and direct homeless individuals to services and shelter and take enforcement action when necessary. In addition, the Mayor's Office will provide a designated point of contact for center concerns. While Family Health Centers will make every effort to prevent abandoned property, litter, graffiti, and unsanitary conditions, the San Diego Environmental Services Department is committed to addressing these issues in a timely manner if they arise. And as they have done with the recent opening of the new Storage Connect Center, outreach teams will be active in the area surrounding the center to engage homeless individuals, establish trusting relationships, and inform them of the resources that are available to assist them to transition off the street. To support the successful operation of the center, the city's responsibilities include providing for weekly environmental services cleanings of the exterior of the premises. The regularity of cleaning shall be evaluated throughout the term of the operation of the center and shall be increased or decreased accordingly based on need. Regular San Diego Police Department patrols in the vicinity of the center. Entering into a lease agreement with Family Health Centers for site control of the property prior to the opening of the center. And obtaining all necessary permits and clearances for the operation of the center, including California Environmental Quality Act review, National Environmental Policy Act review, all necessary permits for Americans with Disabilities Act upgrades, and land use ordinance.
As mentioned earlier, the Housing Commission administers agreements for the City of San Diego's homeless shelters and services programs, based on an MOU between the Housing Commission and the City that first took effect July 1, 2010. The Housing Commission and City entered into a separate MOU for the temporary bridge shelter programs, which was later amended to also address the duties of the parties concerning the City's Storage Connect Center. Pending the approval of the amended and restated MOU for the temporary bridge shelters and the Storage Connect Center to include administrative activities related to the Housing Navigation Center, the Housing Commission will enter into an agreement with Family Health Centers of San Diego in amounts referenced in the report to provide for center operations for a period of up to 3 years from the date of commencement. In doing so, the Housing Commission will ensure that Family Health Centers adheres to all contract requirements in the implementation and ongoing operation of the center and meets the expectations for service delivery, program metrics, and reporting as detailed in the contract scope of work. The City will fund this project and has made funding available for 5 years through 2023 at an annual operating budget of $1.55 million. The source of funds is a combination of $1 million annually in Community Development Block Grant, CDBG funds, $300,000 annually in City General funds, and $250,000 annually in low and moderate income housing funds. In addition, in fiscal year 2019, the city is providing an additional $300,000 in CDBG funds for tenant improvements. As part of the approval of the contract of operations of the Housing Navigation Center, the Housing Commission is requesting the city provide an annual advancement of funds to cover the projected annual operating expenses, and in fiscal year 2019, the projected cost of the tenant improvements. Staff requests the Housing Commission Board recommend the following actions. First, the City Council authorized the execution of a first amended and restated Memorandum of Understanding between the City of San Diego and the Housing Commission for the City of San Diego Temporary Bridge Shelters and Transitional Storage Center to also address the duties of the parties concerning the City of San Diego's Housing Navigation Center, subject to the final approval of Housing Commission General Counsel and the Office of the City Attorney as to form and content. Second, the Housing Authority approve a one-year agreement with 2 one-year options to extend at the Housing Commission's sole discretion for a term of 3 years if and when all options are exercised with Family Health Centers of San Diego to operate the center on terms and conditions as set forth in agreement as it may be amended upon advice of General Counsel of the Housing Commission. Authorize the President and Chief Executive Officer or delegated designee to execute the agreement and any and all other documents and agreements that are necessary to implement these approvals. Authorize the execution of a first amended and restated Memorandum of Understanding between the City of San Diego and the Housing Commission for the City of San Diego Temporary Bridge Shelters and Transitional Storage Center to also address the duties of the parties concerning the center, and as it may be amended upon the advice of General Counsel for the Housing Commission and the Office of City Attorney. Authorize the President and CEO to take such actions as are reasonably necessary to implement the approvals referenced in this report, and authorize the President and CEO to substitute funding sources and/or increase funding amounts for services provided under the agreement for the operation of the center and under the construction agreement for initial tenant improvements at the amounts, and under construction for initial tenant improvements at the premises by not more than 10% of the original amount allocated herein, if necessary, without further action of the Housing Commission or Housing Authority, but only if and to the extent that such funds are determined to be available for such purposes and when it is determined to be in the best interest of the Housing Commission. If the Housing Commission approves these actions today, these items will be presented to the Housing Authority and the City Council for consideration in September. Jonathan Herrera, the City of San Diego's Senior Advisor on Homelessness, is with us this morning and available to answer any questions you may have. This concludes our presentation, and we are also happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much for the staff report. I know you've covered some of these items in your staff report that we just heard right now, but I'm going to ask the questions again. Please remind us who selected the site for this transitional center?
There was a source selection committee. The City of San Diego.
And on the funding for this, the funds are coming from?
The City of San Diego.
Okay. There are if there's changes required, you're asking for our authorization, that there could be changes up to 10% of the costs that we would authorize our CEO to be able to implement without coming back to the commission. Is that right?
That is specifically the construction agreement for the initial tenant improvements.
For the $300,000.
The $300,000,
okay.
The 10%.
Very good. Let me.
Correction. It's a total. It's both the operations it's both the operational costs and the tenant improvements.
So 10% would be roughly about $180,000 to $190,000 that we would authorize the CEO to make the decision on his own, we would hope that that would be able to come back to the commission and report in if those changes are made. Let me turn my questioning to the selection of the operator that you're bringing here before us today. You feel like you've done a thorough job in your analysis of the various bidders that bid on this contract?
Well, do you want me to speak?
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Deborah has the names that she can share of the selection committee.
I'm asking you. But, do you feel like that staff and the group has done an adequate job in analyzing the various bidders?
We spent quite a bit of time. I'd say more time than normal on this. This is a very big project. The proposals were very large, 4 to 5 inches apiece, going through those, and spent quite a bit of time going through the evaluation. And we're very impressed with the proposal from Family Health Centers.
And so you're bringing Family Health Centers as a preferred contractor to run this operation for us. Is that right?
Yes.
And did staff receive any kind of input from the community of concerns with Family Health Centers as being the operator of this facility?
Frankly, not early on. We've heard a little concerns addressed more recently, which we have been in conversations with Family Health Centers about, but we still feel that they by far bring a level of experience, particularly dealing with this particular population, that will help mitigate issues around crisis, issues around mental health or behaviors, things like that, to really be able to engage clients in a way because of their background that other bidders did not have. Not that they don't work with these populations, but Family Health Centers' variety of services that they can bring to the table to increase stabilization, increase engagement, and their proposal and approach to how they wanted to move forward was very impressive.
And the scope of the contract includes work around the outside of the building as well, doesn't it?
So there's a request that they make every effort to ensure that loitering, littering, and graffiti does not happen within a one-block radius of the contract. That's basically the one block related to their scope of work.
And do you feel like that's because the city realizes that we have quite a bit of residential around this building, right?
There's residential around this building. There's other homeless services being provided in this vicinity as well. So I think from my talks with the city, part of the commitment is really going to be looking at how all of those agencies work together and have a very coordinated approach in addressing that area.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions before we open it up to the public testimony? Okay, very good. Let me first ask Jonathan Herrera from the City of San Diego to come forward. Mr. Herrera, welcome.
Good morning, Chair Tassin and honorable members of the board. Jonathan Herrera, Senior Advisor on Homelessness for the City of San Diego. As a city and most definitely as a region, we really truly have been striving to create a crisis response system that's capable of addressing the needs of our unsheltered population and quickly identifying the resources that are needed to provide them the housing stability to transition off the streets. This center will truly function as the physical manifestation of our coordinated entry system, a place for individuals to be assessed, to be able to be connected to the resources that they need, triaged in instances where are appropriate, and more importantly, receive those connections and referrals to partnering local, county, state, and federal agencies, and as well as developing a personalized approach and plan for addressing their housing situation. Earlier this year at his State of the City address, Mayor Faulkner laid out his overarching strategy for addressing the homeless crisis, and it really revolves around three specific core areas. To connect, to support, and then to house. To connect our homeless population with our care network, provide them temporary relief through supportive services during that time of transition, and at the end of the day, find them a permanent home. Again, our goal is to connect, to support, and to house. The Housing Navigation Center truly is the culmination of these efforts and will serve to strengthen not only the regional coordination amongst our various service providers and local government agencies, but also ensuring the maximum utilization of our existing resources as we strive to ensure that instances of homelessness in our community are rare, brief, and non-recurring. Thank you.
Mr. Hearn, while you're there, let me just ask you, you heard staff talk about the process that went they went through in vetting the various contractors to do this, to operate this center, didn't you? You heard that, right?
Yes.
Okay. And are you in agreement with what staff has mentioned this morning?
I am consistently impressed by the quality of work that's delivered by the Housing Commission and staff in vetting these types of proposals, and fully agree with their assessment that this is the right operator.
And as the city has decided wanting to move forward with this important asset, I take it that we've done some outreach to the local East Villages group, homeowners group.
Yes.
What the city's contemplating here?
Yes, there have been several informal conversations, more recently having actual formal presentations with the local residents, business groups, stakeholders, just to have an open dialogue about what their concerns are, what our approach is at the facility, and how best we can ensure that the facility is operated at a high degree, but also has minimal impacts on the quality of life in the surrounding community.
So given the concerns that you heard from the community when you've been out there, you believe that the MOU, as staff has presented it to us here, with the scope of work and with the issues that Family Health Centers is going to be addressing here, that we have adequately met the concerns, or address the concerns, I should say, that the community has brought forward to us.
It's a very big priority for us to ensure that we implement good neighbor policies, not only on the city's behalf, but within the operating standards of the contract, to ensure that that level of standard is maintained in the operations as well as outside of the facility. And that requires a degree of coordination between the Housing Commission, the operator, and the various city departments, and that is our goal.
And do you envision that once we get up and operational, that we will continue to meet with the community and to get input on how things are going?
Most definitely. Obviously, internal discussions amongst the parties that are involved, and also utilizing the conversations held through the neighborhood advisory community to our council to obtain direct feedback from local stakeholders and continue to make improvements where necessary.
Thanks for testimony this morning. Appreciate that. Any other questions from... Okay. Thank you, sir. Mr. Ron Mariello, please.
Good morning. Thank you for the time. And thank you what appears to me to be a serious look at this project and its impact to the city. I'm a 12-year owner of a project at 17th and Logan. I'm in Barrio Logan, not in East Village.
Close enough.
And we talk a lot about East Village, but I think we're building a fence of properties between East Village and Barrio. And if you look at the new Sherman Heights storage facility, Father Joe's, his expansion, what was a temporary but now is a permanent winter shelter at the foot of, what street is that? Main. We're really setting fence posts into that corridor that is creating, to me, a planning division between the two neighborhoods. I understand homeless. I deal with it on my property every day. I'm not a NIMBY. I lost my wife over this project because I put our savings into this, and it's been great. And I have had an impact in Barrio Logan, but I'm forced to deal with what happens after the one block that they're talking about. That one block is great. I'm sure it'll be clean. I'm two blocks away, and I tend to be the host. So I'd like you to take those factors into consideration. We all have to pay a price. We all have to accept some responsibility. I just think Barrio and East Village in this corridor is accepting way more than its share. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. Hillary Goldie.
Good morning, and thank you for your time. I wanted to introduce myself. I'm with the East Village Association, but the comments that I am making are on behalf of the East Village developers and property owners. So I just wanted to point out that there is a distinction. Firstly, the real estate deal spending $7 million to buy one building worth half that amount is insane. The city could have invested the money and used the interest to provide multiple navigation centers. Secondly, where are the committed funds to mitigate the negative impacts on East Village from this use? Are we going to suffer more depletion of our clean and safe money to properly address the problems? And lastly, if the city continues to pile on homeless services in East Village, which we have been assured they would not do, then they will kill the golden goose of development. Lenders and potential equity partners are now being confronted with the homeless problem, and it is making them wary of investing in East Village. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Tora Guerrero?
Good morning, and I'd like to also enter my comments into the record, as well as a letter that was provided to city officials and Lisa Jones with East Village Association concerns.
Thank you.
Good morning, Housing Commission and recognized dignitaries. I'm speaking to you today as the Executive Director of the East Village Association. EBA is San Diego's largest business improvement district and encompasses the 130 blocks between the downtown areas of 7th Avenue East to 17th Street. Currently, more than 700 businesses are located in our footprint, with an estimated 13,000 residents today expected to grow to over 30,000 residents in the next decade. These numbers are significant as they not only represent increased developer, business, and residential capital in our downtown area, but they also represent a thriving urban enclave that has the ability to grow if we as a county make the responsible decisions to dictate our potential. Specifically, in the southern portion of the neighborhood, all you have to do is look at our new skyline to recognize the growth of all the residential developments, local businesses, and civic funding projects such as the East Village Green, which is coming online in about 2 years, and the first installment of the Downtown Mobility Plan. Why do I name the southern portion of our East Village? Because they also all shoulder the additional responsibility of hosting the only homeless mail and laundry services in all of San Diego County, the two short-term tenting solutions that simply put a Band-Aid on the largest hepatitis outbreak since 1970s, and Father Joe's Village, who provide the thankless treatment of housing, rental assistance, health care, food, clothing, education, job training, mental health, addiction treatment, and child development to our most needy neighbors. And I say neighbors because we as East Village, and as mentioned, have never been NIMBYs in helping find a solution to our homeless crisis. What we're asking you here today is that we as a community receive no more single-sided solutions and one single-sided footprint that's supposed to help all of our San Diego residents. We ask the Navigation Center contract negotiations, which we will be meeting with the Housing Commission in about 2 weeks' time, that we first prioritize the over 500 homeless individuals that currently reside in the East Village neighborhood. We operate in the field prior to galvanizing the non-downtown San Diego homeless population. We provide not a one-block radius, but instead a three-block radius for security, cleaning, and no loitering in front of the center, and that we have a dedicated San Diego Police Department officer stationed on 17th Street for what we all know is a corridor for vagrancy, drug-related incidents, and other acts that have a direct impact on our economic vitality of our East Village. We'll continue to have our voices be heard. We'll continue to meet with the city officials as well as county officials to discuss some of our concern. It should be known that we already host 84% of permanent supporting housing in all the downtown area, and East Village has 70% of all the downtown unsheltered homeless population. So please, we're asking to get this operated contract with family health centers correct to be able to manage the only now known city and county solution to a navigation center.
Thank you, Ms. Guerrero. Appreciate you being here today. Your points are well taken, and I'm very happy to hear that you guys are going to be meeting with staff to be able to work this, you know, agreement on the operational center. That's important. I appreciate your constructive comments this morning.
Thank you.
Mark Malapard, did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, you did.
Man.
It's hard.
Well, mine's hard, too, so I'm very sympathetic to mispronouncing names.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Yes, thank
I represent East Village Residents Group. And
I want to support this, but I have reservations, and they're just in the form of questions that, you know, really would help me if they could get answered. And I, first of all, want to know why you think this is going to work. Are there particular cities that have actually done this, got this model, and are implemented successfully? The other question I have is, well, what incentive is there for the homeless to go down there and go to that navigation center in the first place? There is no real tangible, direct, immediate incentive like food, shelter, or showers. And then they have the prospect of having to endure a long bureaucracy, a process that's labored and tedious, to say the least. And besides that, you know, it's a dangerous place down there. Why risk going down there? You know, on the other side of the block, man, it's a mess. I have friends that are clients there at Studio 15 that just, they fear being there. They want to get out of there. They go to PATH if they can. They go anywhere they can. So it's a big concern. And I would like to know just what how a police presence is going to be added to that place. And how many additional police? Are there going to be some on bicycles? Then, also want to know what kind of a plan of outreach you have. How many teams are there going to be? How often are they going to go out? Who's going to be included on those teams? I think this the outreach part is really the biggest part, because, like I said, I think there's some disincentive to getting there. So those questions getting those answers would be just real helpful. And I appreciate your time and appreciate your help.
Mr. Malapart, I appreciate you being here. And I'm sympathetic to people that live in the area.
Yeah.
And you deserve to get the answers to your questions. We have representatives here from the city of San Diego that you're encouraged to meet with. That's why I've been asking the questions about outreach to the local community. You need to know the answers to those questions. And so that's critically important. And it's important to me also that, as Ms. Guerrero just testified, that as we move forward with this operational, you know, assuming this commission approves it today, that you have input into that operational agreement and get answers to those questions that you're asking for today. So thank you for being here.
And thank you again.
Kathleen Hallahan.
Good morning, Chairman.
Good morning.
And distinguished members. My name is Kathleen Hallahan. I'm president of the East Village Residents Association. In witnessing the media coverage of the hearings for the new storage facility in Sherman Heights, I was appalled at the needless negative publicity for the city and the reputation of Sherman Heights. The East Village believes that this type of scenario can be avoided in the hearing for the Navigation Center that would be placed in our neighborhood. The East Village community reached out to communicate our goals of proactive engagement where the city and the neighborhood could work together, and the contract for the provider and the mitigation services for the neighborhood would be developed as a package. The goal was to create a model for the successful integration of a large social service facility in our neighborhood from the conceptual stages, not as a perpetual battle or endless struggle to have the neighborhood's concerns addressed. Reading the minimal and vague language regarding safety and cleanliness in the surrounding one-block area surrounding the facility, I am not sure this is a shared goal with those who wrote the contract. I am hoping this body will be proactive and create a document or recommendations that will be an example of a more enlightened approach. Our negative experience of working for 2 years with the family health centers and the city, where the priorities of the needle exchange program were put above the law, above the health and safety of our neighborhood, and above the health of young school children, is fresh in our minds. Since this situation extended through the hepatitis A crisis, where there is a heightened awareness of the dangers emanating from dirty needles. This negligence is particularly alarming. Therefore, it is essential that all expectations, responsibility, mitigation measures, and their schedules for resolution, and the funds to achieve these are identified now before going to council. Lastly, the public conversation needs to be changed. The integration of service facilities into a neighborhood need not be seen as the imposition of a permanent, constant state of negotiating with a distracted and difficult adversary. Appropriately, the City Council is on the path of specifying properties all over the city to address the needs of the homeless in their own communities. This proposed model that we are speaking of now would benefit the implementation of these projects and assist in achieving a peace of mind for all those lives impacted by the decisions of this agency. This board must approach the issue truly holistically. The contract and the mitigation measures must proceed in a parallel manner. The EV cannot afford the negative publicity that a battle before City Council can bring. The private sector is making every effort to recover from the city's negligence, resulting in our reputation as a skid row of San Diego. Please insist that the requirements mentioned in our handout are listed in the contract document before it goes to City Council, and recommend that the city fulfill their responsibilities as noted in that list as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Joan Wojcik.
Actually, Wojcik.
Wojcik.
Yes.
I got one right and one wrong.
I know.
You know, in baseball, that's pretty good. Yeah. Batting 500. Sorry about that.
My name is Joan Wojcik, and I lived in East Village for 14 years. The East Village residents, EVRG, want this Navigational Center to succeed. But to accomplish that, there needs to be a strong community involvement in the process, and there was not. Therefore, to ensure the success of the project, EVRG is recommending the following items to be included in writing in the contract. The program is going to be of outreach and not drop-in center. The Housing Navigational Center will first serve the over 500 homeless currently living on the streets in East Village before extending the services outside of East Village. Next, the clientele receiving services will be for the other five districts in downtown. The city will also guarantee homeless brought in from surrounding areas for processing will be transported back to their original communities. The city will approve establishing additional intake facilities throughout San Diego within the next year. The city will establish a monthly review committee to include reps from the center, East Village residence groups, San Diego Police Department, Clean and Safe, and representatives from the mayor's office and Councilman Ward's office. The city will meet with East Village community groups to establish guidelines for the operation of the facility, which will include 24/7 police patrols within a 5-block radius of the center. Also, sidewalk power washing 3 times a week within a 5-block radius of the center, and strict enforcement of loitering and encampment laws. We have been through this before, and these procedures are needed in writing for us to feel reassured. The cost of all these increased services will be paid for by the city and not from the East Village Clean and Safe budget. The East Village Resident Group believe strongly if these special conditions are written into the contract, the program will be successful and provide provide a blueprint for the entire city to follow. So this is very important for you, and I would suggest you may want to put this on hold until these conditions are put into the contract. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wojcik. Good input. And finally, Maylene Levine, please. How did I do with the name?
Well,
close. Levine?
It's Maylene.
Levine. And you and I have met before, and so I should have known better, right?
I'm on the partnership board. Hello, again, my name is Maylene Levine. I am the founder and president of the Board of Trustees of Urban Discovery Academy, which is the only K-8 school in downtown. I also own a business, Visual Asylum, a design firm on the same street, 14th Street. And I'm here to speak about my concerns about family health services. The Family Health Services was non-cooperative in the needle exchange van movement. It took us almost two years, hundreds of emails, a dozen meetings, including various members of the community, Councilman Ward's office, and representatives from family health centers from August of 2016 through April of 2018. They were in violation of a city ordinance to not have a needle exchange program within an 8-block radius of a school. They were within a 2-block radius, and they were there for 3.5 years total with a school in the neighborhood. They knew that they were in violation and articulated that they were in the neighborhood before the school. They threatened that maybe they would just go to city council and request to be grandfathered in, rather than doing the right thing, which was to just move the van, not a building, away from the children. They requested that Clean and Safe not have safety ambassadors in the vicinity during hours of operation. This is in writing, as it would likely deter their clientele, which we all know are in the needle exchange program, lots of drug users. I asked for increased presence from Clean and Safe as our teachers walk sometimes to their cars a block and a half in the dark, and were afraid to do so on Thursday nights when the van was there. So based on past performance, I do not believe the language in the agreement with FHC is specific enough on how exactly they'll execute the promises asserted. I'm concerned because I feel like there's a continuation of decline in the community, in the neighborhood, with the loss essentially of Faultline Park. The school can no longer use Faultline Park. It's too dangerous for parents and students. The school has demanded that the teachers do not walk the block and a half and use Faultline Park. Parents, now that the restaurants are closed at Faultline Park and it's too dangerous, they don't feel safe to walk their kids after school. So I just am worried that we're more and more in the neighborhood, not less. I don't understand the rationale of putting more of the services into our neighborhood when there's a few of us really trying hard to create a viable neighborhood community. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, commissioners, that's the testimony that we have, unless somebody wants to speak that didn't submit a speaker slip. Those are the speakers that we have before us today. Let me start off by saying that I think that the testimony that we heard today from the public has been very constructive. I think that what you hear today is you heard people talk about, look, we don't necessarily are against this project, but we want to make sure that this operational agreement is solid and it tries to protect us from the impacts of this facility. And I don't think that that's too much to ask for. Issues like when Ms. Guerrero talks about maybe 1-block radius isn't sufficient. There's other people talk about 5. She said maybe a 3-block radius. I'd ask staff to take that into consideration. I'd ask staff to take into consideration the impacts of that or the suggestions that the staff has been bringing. This is why I asked early on the questions, have we been meeting with the public? And Mr. Herrera indicated that they have. It's important that as we move forward with a facility as you know, like this, that we try to address as much of the concerns of the local community as possible. Again, they're not saying don't do it. That they're saying is try to make it as tight as possible so that we can minimize the impacts that we have. And staff, it's important that we hear those comments and that we try to address as many of those issues and suggestions that staff is bringing forward with us today. With that, let me open it up to commissioners. Any questions or comments? Commissioner Benvenuto?
Thank you. I'll start following up on your comments about outreach. We learned, I think, a lot with the Sherman Heights facility, and I think we are still learning as a commission and as a city how best to collaborate and make these things viable. As part of our larger strategy, I appreciate the importance of the Navigation Center, and I appreciate that our conversation here today, while I hear the concerns and I take those into serious consideration about the location, the conversation today is not about the location. The conversation today is about our contract and the operation of this facility. So that said, I think there's still room to grow with our conversation with our community. Informal conversations are wonderful and probably create a really great opportunity for trust that you're there and having those informal conversations, but I'd like to see some more robust formal conversations. A dedicated line only works if people know there's a dedicated line. And so making sure that we are front and center, I would appreciate seeing that more collaboration from the city and the commission staff going forward. The advisory group, I'm very glad to see that will exist again. How is the advisory group formulated?
So, and it's the way it worked with the transitional storage center is that the operator was contracted to form the advisory group. So generally they form it and facilitate it. Citizens within the advisory group for the Sherman Heights area and the Barrio Logan area are very involved, and to some degree, it's sort of a co-coordination that's occurring. We actually just had our last meeting on Wednesday, which was it's actually becoming a really great environment as we move forward. So it's really going to be co-coordinated. You know, we want the community to feel like they have ownership over that group, and that there's not just something that's being held to serve a purpose and meet a contract requirement, but something that is an actual ongoing dialogue. And we have emails back and forth between that group throughout the month. So basically it would look very similar to that, where city staff from Environmental Services, Assistant Chief Paul Connolly from the Neighborhood Policing Division, city representatives from the mayor's office, and myself meet with them on a monthly basis and then have ongoing conversations, frankly, throughout the month.
Wonderful.
So, and in fact, we haven't had a single call to our hotline yet. I regularly check just to make sure it's actually working because we haven't had any calls, but I think because we're being very active mm-hmm. in that dialogue and that ongoing conversation, it hasn't been needed.
That's wonderful. I think
that's our goal.
That speaks to how proactive we are on this side of the equation. So if we could mimic that proactivity on the prep side, I think we might be able to mitigate a lot of that and have some more transparency. So that is wonderful. And we don't limit location or the residential location of any of the advisory group members, just thinking to the point of 5 blocks, 3 blocks, 1 block. Could somebody 5 blocks away serve on that advisory group?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Thank you. Additionally, regarding the contract, is Family Health Centers a current member of the regional task force?
Yes, I believe they are.
We actually have
great
Fran Butler Cohen here.
Wonderful.
Who can address that. But yes, they operate a lot of services related to homeless services. So.
Great, and I did see that. You know, we talk a lot about their extensive experience in mental health and dental health and medical services. I'm very familiar with that. But when we talk about the other services, particularly with case management, things that are not so traditionally under the healthcare umbrella, I'm curious if you could expand on those.
So that would fall under their healthcare for the homeless programs.
Okay.
So they have over 23,000 registered persons experiencing homelessness in 2017 within their programs. So they work with this population a lot. And their staff are trained to identify when someone is experiencing homelessness, how they then connect them to that healthcare for the homeless program that has dedicated case managers that go well beyond just providing medical care services. So they're really about case coordination, linking to other types of services, getting them into the coordinated entry system. They have street-based outreach that is part of that as well.
Okay. That is reassuring, that
warm handoff already exists, those relationships are already robust. So would family health centers then have the authority to determine what services and programs are co-located in the facility, or who makes that decision?
That would be in coordination with us, as that they have their contract with us, so, but we also would coordinate with the city. So at the end of the day, whether we did or didn't have someone come in, the final decision would be the commission's in coordination with the city.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you. And then the county, is the county playing a strong role in this?
Yes, and we actually, Jonathan from the city could maybe speak to that more, but they are committed to bringing county services either through referral, through outreach, through through site at the site for eligibility, mental health services,
okay,
benefits.
Great. And then, you know, I'm curious on the, with regard to staff, one of the things that we've learned through the bridge shelters was obviously the level of training for staff. We talked a bit about maybe LCSWs or might be necessary. Are we talking about the credentialing of our housing navigators for this facility?
So that was actually one of the things that we were particularly impressed with the family health centers, is that they have cross training. So they are very robust in their internal training programs, also their internal data technology programs. So they're very data driven, their data analytics and their training programs were really impressive. And they have not only just a housing navigator that is trained to do housing navigation, they have them cross-trained across multiple different positions, 23 different positions in all that are going to be involved in this program, including licensed clinical social workers, nurses, things of that nature. They also have support through the UCSD, let's see if I have to get the name right, Urban Studies and Planning Program, as well as the director of the UCSD Community Psychiatric Program to help with developing assessments and training and do data analytics.
That sounds really promising. Yeah. That's great to know. Thank you. And, yeah, I want to reiterate the chair's comments about the constructive feedback we're getting. Much to the point that was made by one of the speakers, I appreciate the positive, collaborative tone that we're taking on this and, you know, protecting the vitality of East Village and the ability for their, you know, economic opportunities to continue versus framing them in a way that perhaps is avoidable. So this has been a much more positive experience, and thank you. I'm sure that we will be continuing to hear the evolution of this as some of those suggestions are incorporated. Great.
Commissioner Walsh?
A couple quick questions for our CEO and maybe council here, just upon reading of this MOU and our recommendation today. So the recommendation is on the provider selected to accompany the MOU, correct?
Yes, sir.
And in the provisions, based on our recommendation, we allow the CEO or council, based on determination, to make amendments to this recommendation should those be needed in the future. Is that correct?
That's correct. To the extent that they're, you know, technical amendments, I mean, if they're
policy,
they would come back. That's amount, right. Dollar amounts would obviously have to come back.
If I could, that's why I wanted council to answer that, not me, since it pertained to me.
Sure.
You all authorized me to execute your policy within certain boundaries and limitations and expansions. And you heard a dollar limit mentioned a while ago, which is typical. Mm-hmm. So as long as the spirit of the policy is honored, then yes, I have flexibilities, but I know enough to bring back to you all if the policies need to be changed or altered.
And in this process for people, you know, often we're the tip of the spear on these issues before the city council or the housing authority sees them. So as this moves through the process, people will have the opportunity to continue to dialogue with the commission and its excellent staff, but also the housing authority.
Yes, sir, and I'll expand on that by basically 3 points. You saw in the presentation, we have had a formal relationship with the city in the homelessness arena since 2010. And we have incrementally increased the level of this organization's activity in the homelessness arena over the last 8 years. We are not the homelessness agency for the city, but we have a role to play as in partnership with other organizations and the city in addressing the issue. I think a particular skill that we bring that's very good, and that this is a commendation to staff, is to oversee and administer contracts on behalf of the city, protecting the city's interest by operators in the field. And I think that's a proper role for us to play. I think the role the staff have played in putting out this request, doing the interviews, making the selection, they did, I think, a wonderful, commendable job. Now, does that mean going forward we might not improve or enhance the way we do our business? Of course not. We're going to continue growing and changing. However, given where we are right now, our 8 years involved in this level of business and what's before you today, my recommendation is that what staff has done has been the correct thing to do from a business standpoint, and I recommend your approval of this. Now, if circumstances change going forward, of course I'm going to bring it back to you.
I ask all those questions for my edification, but also for everyone watching at home or listening here, because we're all venturing into new territory somewhat here. And I listened to the comments for people present, and it's very clear that the better angels have showed up, right? The people who are looking to present San Diego in its absolute best light to address the needs of those that are the most needy. But also, they recognize that it takes a village, but they don't want it to only be East Village. And we're remarkably sympathetic to that and empathetic to that. That's what this commission talks about every time we meet. And so I ask all those questions to say, okay, the staff has done what their responsibility is to do under contracting ethics and regulations. They've found a talented provider. They didn't pick the location. They've picked the provider. And they've begun to engage the community, and we need to do so more and meet more and figure out what augmentations may be needed, whether it's by the city or by the commission, as we learn through this process. And I'm encouraged by that. I'm encouraged by us, but that's easy to say. But I'm most encouraged also by the community's willingness to engage in that productive dialogue, because I think that from what I've seen, that means we'll get there. I think we can get there. So I really appreciate the time and energy. I appreciate the comments, and thank you for helping me better understand this contract.
Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Hubbard?
Yes, I wanted to say I did enjoy the testimonies that I heard today. I think it's very important to hear the community come out and speak. It gives sort of a human side feel for it that we don't exactly get sometimes through formal presentations. And I know that staff is going to be meeting with some of those who spoke to answer their questions. However, there is one particular question that Mr. Malapard had asked that I'm curious to know, actually, in your research, has this type of project been done or is being done now, currently, successfully?
Mr. Herrera, you want to answer that question? The question is the actual facility, this type of transitional facility, what's the success of this that you guys have looked at from in other places?
Well, the development of this service model has definitely been a process of evolution. It's very similar to what we started with PATH, and that there was a centralized location for individuals to access an array of services that was limited to the clients of that specific program. And we have since taken and expanded that model, taking a look at what other cities have done. San Francisco came out with the housing, with a navigation center. It's more modeled around providing shelters on a smaller basis. But we did take a look at what other city practices were doing in terms of coordinating the provision of the various services that are made across their community and how best to accomplish that, as well as ongoing discussions with the regional task force on how to best implement some of the components of our community plan.
I'd just like to add to that. So we've been talking with the HUD technical assistance team as we've been working through planning for this project. I also recently was out in D.C. on the 29th of June on expert convening on unsheltered homelessness, and I'm certainly not an expert, so I felt like that was really a misnomer, but I'm learning a lot. And one of the things that several of the communities were doing were some things around housing navigation centers. We've also seen some success in it in the Washington, D.C. area. I want to point out that regardless of homelessness, for persons in poverty, there's a lot of research around the difficulty of them navigating systems. So nothing's close together. If you need your ID from the DMV, but you need your child's birth certificate from the city offices, and then you need to go get eligibility and you know, to CalWORKs from the CalWORKs office, none of these places tend to be located near each other, and sometimes they've seen a lot of research around people spending most of their days just navigating from one place to another in any given week, trying to meet their basic needs. And so one of the things that the Housing Navigation Center model looks at, not just this model, but other models I've seen, is how to bring services, or at least access to those services, together in one place, whether it's virtually or at a site or in through outreach, so that people aren't spending most of their time and often most of their funds on transportation trying to navigate from one place to the next. So that's part of what this type of model is built on. It's a great question.
I see that. So when they were saying, some of the speakers were saying that, I guess, I'm back to the thought process on that, but is it, I forgot what I was going to ask. Sorry.
Want me to come? I'll come back to you. Mr. Gentry? Mr. Herr, if you want to just take a seat in the front row there, because you'll be asked probably to come back up.
Just a couple of comments, and Lisa, you correct me if I misstate this, but we were asked as one of the experts, believe it or not, to D.C. for this June 29th meeting. And Lisa, would you talk just for a minute about the compliment they threw toward us in this meeting?
So it was a very interesting meeting. It was an all-day session. They had providers from and city officials, representatives from Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Santa Clara, Seattle, those areas that are really seeing high unsheltered homeless populations. And at the end of my presentation that I gave on our temporary bridge shelters, where I really tried to talk about what went well, but also the challenges that we were experiencing and how we're trying to figure out how to address those, bring in a third-party evaluation, things of that nature, the executive director of the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, Matthew Daugherty, stood up and thanked San Diego for being so transparent and open about talking about what they're attempting to do, that we're on the vanguard of trying new things, and that we're willing to have conversations about successes and challenges. And he really appreciated that. It was nice to hear.
Mr. Gentry.
You hear other communities say that they have solved homelessness. And I would encourage you, when you hear that, to listen for the adjectives and adverbs and not the nouns and verbs. They use words like effectively or substantially, which means kind of, sort of. And being San Diegans, we tend to think that we are either the worst or the best at whatever we do. And since this is a problem, we got to be the worst, and we can learn from other people who've already solved it. This is a mainstream USA problem. It's not a San Diego alone problem. And it is growing everywhere, particularly in high-cost areas like the entire West Coast. We've had people visit various settings here all the way up to from Seattle to Portland to San Francisco to L.A. over the past 6 months. So I don't think that there's any magic solution anywhere that we can, quote, learn from. Now, there are techniques and approaches and successes we can learn from, just like other people are beginning to learn from us, too. We're learning as we go. We're treating this as an area where there will need to be a San Diego solution to what is a San Diego issue, but fitting within the mainstream of the country. And so I suspect that where we are 2-3 years from now is going to be far different from where we were 2-3 years ago. But we're growing, we're learning, and I'll point out just in terms of recent accomplishments since that board meeting we had here back in March that was so contentious. We have had basically positive feedbacks on both the shelters, the bridge shelters, as well as the storage facilities so far. Now, it's early days, and I'm sure there'll be all kinds of reactions as we go forward. But we're trying to put together a comprehensive solution here that's going to involve a teamwork of a lot of players. And all we're asking for from you all today is the approval that we do our part within the matrix of this overall solution that the city has taken the leadership role in.
But on that point there, one thing that I hadn't heard from staff, given that this is new, you come to us asking us for a one-year contract. I didn't read anywhere in here, maybe I missed it. In the event something goes wrong, and what's the cancellation clauses?
All of our contracts give us the opportunity to go back and cancel it whenever we want. It's up to us. But generally, we do have conversations and we step through a process. We do make sure, and our council makes sure, that we protect the agency at all times as it relates to contracts.
Yeah. It's not only protecting the agency. It's making sure that if we're going down the road and it's not working, that we're able to pivot. That's where I'm going with it.
And
that's where, and the monthly data performance and review becomes really critical too. So data is not the answer. It helps you figure out where to look, right? Okay. So data is the beginning of a conversation, but that's a big component of what my staff on our administrative side does, is dive into data and work with clients. And this is such a big project and has such a potential for positive impact, and also, if not operated effectively, some real challenges. So this is going to be an area where I'm spending quite a bit of my time, frankly.
I think erring on the side of a short leash is a good idea. Mr. Herrera, let me ask you a question, if I could. One of the items that was brought up today, and it's something that in my role with the Downtown Partnership over the years, I've been a strong proponent of, and that is the issue of strict enforcement. Now that we're making these investments in the bridge shelters and the storage facility, now this new facility here, the strict enforcement of anti-camp ordinance, where's the city on that?
Yes, and we've made significant headway in that area, most recently with being able to reach a negotiation in which we were able to reduce the time period necessary to conduct abatements where personal property was left. Previously, the city was required to post a 72-hour notification. We've negotiated that now down to 3 hours. And we'll take similar approaches with some of the other legal settlements that restrict the city's ability to maintain the public right-of-way. So, but that maintains a priority for the city of San Diego.
I'm familiar with that. My question is, are we enforcing that 3-hour
Yes.
window now?
Yes. So there was a 30-day period in which we educated the community after the settlement had been renegotiated, just to provide information to impacted communities about the new rules and regulations, as well as the additional resources that are being available. But that new enforcement practice is already in place.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Mr. Mariello, it goes against my rules of running a meeting, but I'm going to allow you to keep.
I appreciate it. Hope you don't regret that. But I think you're on the right track. I just wanted to help you continue this conversation. I'm pretty confident that this organization knows how to run a facility. I'm sure it'll be clean. I'm sure it'll be steam cleaned and very bright. I think looking at how it impacts the surrounding areas and how we coordinate services is really your key role as planning. I'm just going to give you an example, and then I'll step away. On the other side of Commercial, Clean and Safe and the bicycle security people do not come. That's Barrio Logan, and I'm not lobbying for Barrio Logan, but I want to look ourselves as a city, not as communities. So if you go one block south, you are away from Clean and Safe, and you're away from security. That's a breakdown. So I just want to bring those things up as an example of what we need to look at.
Thank you. The comments that were made by Ms. Wolchik and Ms. Guerrero on extending beyond the one block radius have resonated with me, and I'd ask staff to have a close look at that. Commissioners, any other commissioner comments? Commissioner Evans.
Figured out what I wanted to ask. Are there any goals or is milestones set in place to be able to measure the success of this navigation center? It was said that there's concerns that it may be a poor turnout because there's no incentives like showers or food, things like that. So people may not have an incentive to be there. Do you have like a certain number of people that you would, I guess, feel like it's a success or what?
Good question. So it's a good point. If you note in the scope of work that was laid out, it doesn't identify a particular number of persons served. That was kind of left that way intentionally because we also didn't want to create a situation where we were incentivizing the operator to bring people in from outside of the area when the area that's already there needs a lot of focus first. So we were very careful in not putting a requirement of 100% of 2,000 people were served, something like that. So we left that out. The goals that are there are focused on making sure that someone is, one, connected to a housing navigator within a certain period of time. That's within 90 days. We actually expect that to happen much faster than that. And two, that when they're working with a housing navigator, that they become housing ready within 60 days. And what that really means is that generally, at first engagement, people do not have IDs. They don't have information about any resources they have, any verification of their veterans or not. Oftentimes, a lot of documents required to access permanent housing are missing. So that 60 days is that opportunity to get people housing ready, which is essentially get all of those documents in order, also get them connected to benefits, get them connected to health services, get them connected to medication stabilization if needed, so that kind of thing. So those are the two main outcomes. It is worth noting that it's not that there's direct housing resources connected to the Housing Navigation Center, but they will access the resources that exist within the coordinated entry system. They'll just be able to do it much more, I think, efficiently than the different sort of places that are out there now.
But Ms. Jones, I mean, in the private sector, we all often will rely on key performance indicators to make sure that we're specifically measuring the success or failure of a venture.
Right.
And, I mean, that's what I think Commissioner Hubbard is asking.
So it's the time within which they're connected to a housing navigator, time within which they become housing ready. It does look at the number of placements, but we didn't put on a percentage or a requirement of number of placements because the Housing Navigation Center, just as the bridge shelters are, do not have control over those resources, right? So those resources are spread throughout the county, not just within the city, and we're not diverting resources out of the coordinated entry solely to the Housing Navigation Center. Part of what we really want to see within the Housing Navigation Center isn't just that connection to permanent housing resources through coordinated entry, but connection to resources outside of that. And frankly, we don't have enough information in our city right now within our system to identify what those kind of percentages should be. So this is an opportunity to really look at what we can achieve and drive towards those higher numbers, which we then can help inform us as we work through other contracts as well, not just these.
Mr. Gentry?
With respect, I would submit that there's one thing worse than no data, and that's the wrong data. And raw data typically means nothing. You've got to put it in a standard or a perspective. You go back to your baseball agenda a while ago. The major league hitter who fails 7 out of 10 times, which sounds like a pretty bad rate, is good enough to be Hall of Fame material. It's the standard that matters. We've learned with the grid shelters, we tried when that came up back in the winter not to include standards there until we learned what the standards should be. And due to some interest, we put some standards in anyway. You're going to hear a report on that in a workshop in a bit showing that the standards we came up with did not fit. So the same is true here. We're getting in here, and typically when you don't know what your data is going to show in terms of accomplishments, you go by values. And the values here are to connect people to the system and then to help connect them to housing. And that's why it's called a navigation center. It's going to be learning heavily from what we learned from the Housing Your Heroes program 2 years ago, where we literally could not get people off the streets. They cannot get themselves off the streets with all the resources in the world without somebody to help them. So we've learned as we've gone. That's going to happen here, too. And so I think what we'll see happen is we're going to operate by values, connecting people and connecting them to housing. We're going to figure out what achievable, realistic goals should be, and then you can be assured we're going to measure ourselves. But I'd hate to come up with the wrong data so that what we wind up doing is justifying why we didn't connect with bad data in the press and to our critics when it was the data that was the problem and not our actions.
Okay. Any other questions from the commission? Okay. Preparing for the vote on this item, let me end where my comments started, and that is critically important that we stay close to the community, Mr. Herrera, that we listen to what the community is talking about. and the suggestions that they're making for us. We take that into consideration, you know, try to accommodate as much as possible. Again, I was very impressed with the testimony that we had today. People were not coming in and saying, don't do it. They were saying, let's do it as effectively as we possibly can. Protect us. We're investors in this area, and it's important that if you're going to move forward with this facility, that we do it as effectively and unimpactful as possible for our community. So that's really important, and as we move forward with this agreement with Family Health Centers, that we hold their feet to the fire to make sure that they're effective in what they're doing. I would ask that you take into consideration the external radius around this facility beyond the one-block radius. I think that that's important. Mr. Mariello's comments are right. I mean, look, just because we're talking about East Village doesn't mean that we shouldn't be concerned about what's going on in Barrio as well. So with that, commissioners, I'll entertain a motion to approve this the staff recommendation as presented. I have a motion by Commissioner Benvenuto, second by Commissioner Cerdy. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Folks, thank you very much for those that came here to testify about this today. Okay, let's go on to the last item of the agenda today. It's an informational report. It's a workshop and discussion on the third-party evaluation of the City of San Diego's temporary bridge shelter program. Mr. Davis?
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Jeff Davis, Chief of Staff, and with me again is Lisa Jones, Vice President of Homeless Housing Innovations. This morning, we are presenting to you the findings and the recommendations from the third-party Housing First evaluation of the City of San Diego's temporary bridge shelters. To address homelessness in the city and combat the regional hepatitis A outbreak that occurred last year, Mayor Kevin Faulkner was joined on September 13, 2017, by Council Members Ward and Zaff, and our President and CEO, Rick Gentry, and other community leaders to announce the creation of the temporary bridge shelters to help individuals experiencing homelessness. On November 14, 2017, the City Council approved the execution of agreements for the operation and services at the three temporary bridge shelters with revisions that were provided by the City Council. Before we get into the details of the evaluation, we wanted to briefly cover a few items from the bridge shelter informational report for the May 2018 operating month. As of May 31st, 2018, 2,076 individuals experiencing homelessness have been served across the three bridge shelters since shelter opening. The average occupancy rate since opening is 96%. The occupancy rate for the shelter for single adults as of May 31st was 97%. The occupancy rate for the veteran shelter was 92%. And the occupancy rate for the shelter for families with children and single women was 100%. This slide details the number of positive housing exits since shelter opening across the three bridge shelters. As of May 31st, 646 persons were in shelter and able to access a variety of services, receive meals, and work with housing navigators towards housing stability. Through May 2018, there have been 242 individuals who were previously unsheltered that are now housed. 177 exited to permanent housing, and 65 exited to longer-term housing interventions. The Temporary Bridge Shelter Program has piloted innovative approaches to increase shelter impact and incorporate housing-focused services. As with any new program, the assumptions and expectations at inception typically require some adjustments and updates based on the circumstances that become apparent through the operation of the program. In anticipation of the need to continue to develop and refine the bridge shelter program, the original contract agreements provided that a third-party evaluation of the shelters would start in their fourth operating month. The goal of the initial phase of the evaluation is to ensure that the bridge shelter model program design, expectations, and contractual requirements align to foster positive housing outcomes and increase community-wide impact. The goal of the second phase is to ensure that the operations of the individual shelters are in alignment with the principles of Housing First and maintain fidelity to the bridge shelter model. Focus Strategies specializes, I should say, is the third-party consultant that was selected through a competitive bid process, and they specialize in assessing, evaluating, and making recommendations to increase performance for homeless service programs and systems. They are well-versed in the homeless service needs and systems within the City of San Diego and assisted the Regional Task Force on the Homeless with developing the community plan. Focus Strategies has identified both strengths and challenges in the bridge shelter model. The assessment found many strong areas of alignment with national best practices, low barrier to entry, client-focused practices, a service-rich environment, a well-maintained, secure, and safe physical environment, and effective and responsive oversight by the Housing Commission. These were all highlighted as strengths at the shelters. The temporary bridge shelters are providing essential outreach and housing navigation resources, which was a significant resource gap in the city's homelessness crisis response system before the shelters opened. In addition to the other essential staffing positions at the bridge shelters, the shelters have a total of 39 positions added to the citywide response system, 21 housing navigators and 18 street-based outreach workers. This impact on the citywide response system is further enhanced by the rich variety of on-site services provided. On-site services are a key component of the bridge shelter model. In addition to the housing navigation support, residents are provided regular access to medical care through the support of Family Health Center's mobile medical unit, the Father Joe's medical program, and County of San Diego's public health nurses. County eligibility workers are also on site at all three shelters, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs makes regular visits to the shelters. Access to regular meals, showers, wash stations, and laundry facilities make for a service-rich environment that assists with stabilizing a resident's health and well-being and supports them to engage with housing navigators to assist in housing readiness activities. Lisa will now walk you through the findings and recommendations of the first phase of the evaluation.
Focus Strategies identified the relationship between program challenges related to performance outcomes and broader system impediments. The expectation that most of the initial temporary bridge shelter clients would enter as priority level one was not realized. As of May 31, 2018, only 5% of clients were priority level one upon entry. Approximately 60% of individuals served to date are priority level four, which means that as of shelter entry, they had only completed the first step of the coordinated entry system. Due to the speed at which the shelters were implemented, it appears the raw data that helped guide the original design and the coordinated entry system referral process did not sufficiently inform what the system would produce, both in priority level one and two referrals and in the average number of permanent housing vacancies available in a given month within our system. Focus Strategies did not analyze the coordinated entry system as part of this work. However, they stated that from looking at the size of the community's rapid rehousing and permanent supportive housing programs, it is likely that 674 placements would not be available every 120 days. The evaluation identified specific challenges being encountered by the Bridge Shelter Program. Many staff expressed the desire for additional training in crisis intervention and to encourage and engage clients in services. Also, additional training on how to have diversion discussions prior to or during the intake process could help establish client and staff expectations on the housing-focused environment of the shelters. Staffing was also identified as a challenge. All of the shelters have housing navigators on site who help individuals experiencing homelessness to obtain the documents they need to be ready for housing. These are essential services. However, the individuals that the shelters are serving are less housing ready than anticipated, so they required more individualized support. As previously noted, the bridge shelters are serving highly vulnerable individuals. Many are experiencing chronic homelessness and disability, have little to no income, and many are aging. To meet the needs of this population and increase stability so that attaining housing can be a focus for residents, staffing positions that have higher level client engagement and case management skills are recommended. The evaluation identified several recommendations to enhance the program model and outcomes of the bridge shelters. The third-party evaluation strongly recommends building up the capacity of the shelter staff to work with clients to identify housing solutions. This work would include creating dedicated housing specialist case manager positions. This could be done by redefining some existing jobs, but likely would require the addition of staff. providing additional training to all staff on motivational interviewing and trauma-informed care so they are more equipped to work with clients who need significant engagement, considering a small amount of flexible funding available to help clients secure housing outside of the coordinated entry system, ensuring that staffing ratios are sufficient so that staff are available to develop housing plans with each client and to check in regularly with each client on their housing plan. The evaluation states that a deeper culture shift within the temporary bridge shelters is needed so that shelter is understood as a place where people to go to work on housing solutions. In addition, it is recommended to work with the Regional Task Force on the Homeless to develop more refined messaging and communication for clients about the coordinated entry system, including the importance of pursuing other options. The current messaging in the community needs to shift away from fill out these forms and then wait for housing to let's figure out how we can get you back into housing. The evaluation also recommends conducting an analysis to determine the limitations of what can be provided through the coordinated entry system, as a finite number of housing placements are available in any given time frame. The Housing Commission and Regional Task Force are encouraged to work together to determine if steps can be taken to improve the flow of clients from the bridge shelters into permanent housing through the coordinated entry system and standardize case conferencing across the three sites with the Regional Task Force to help match households to vacancies and programs. In addition, the evaluation strongly recommends to set reasonable performance measures. As of April 30, 2018, the positive housing exit rate was 16%, and the permanent housing exit rate was 12%. The third-party evaluation noted that a higher permanent housing exit rate is likely in another 3 months. However, reaching the goal of 65% seems very unlikely. Focus strategies recommend setting a lower goal, at least for the next 6 to 12 months, while some of the other recommendations are being implemented. They recommend setting an interim goal of 30%, which is more realistic, yet still higher than current outcomes. After a year, as new housing services are rolled out and the culture of the shelters continues to shift, the goal could be reevaluated. The evaluation recommends keeping the 90% utilization target, but considering revisiting it as diversion and problem-solving strategies are put in place. The current standard regarding average length of stay is that it should be less than 120 days. All of the shelters are meeting this goal because many have multiple entries and exits, and a significant number of clients still treat the shelter like an emergency bed. A more meaningful measure might be to set a target average length of stay for households that secure housing. This would give both staff and clients a target amount of time to work on a housing plan and would provide a good measure of how efficiently people are moving towards housing. The evaluation also strongly recommends retaining the policy of not imposing a limit on the total length of stay at the shelters.
Focus strategies provided recommendations to enhance the availability of housing-focused services. Changes and refinements to the bridge shelter model will help improve their effectiveness. Some of the proposed recommendations, if implemented, would require additional expenditures for the bridge shelters. Essentially, the recommendations identify that the expectations for exits from shelter to permanent housing will be restricted by the availability of the resources in the system. Therefore, to provide stabilization to the high-need population being served and to maximize opportunities to connect individuals to a variety of housing interventions, higher-level case management and housing stability positions are needed. The second phase of the bridge shelter evaluation focused on the operational practices of each bridge shelter to identify any areas where the shelters may be out of alignment with the bridge shelter model. A critical component of the bridge shelter program model is ensuring that the shelters follow housing first principles. These include requirements such as low barrier to entry, without preconditions such as sobriety, treatment, or service participation requirements, and practicing a harm reduction model which does not require sobriety but addresses heavy drinking and or drug use and its consequences. The goal is for the service provider to engage and encourage shelter residents utilizing trauma-informed care and motivational interviewing in an environment that is welcoming, focused on solutions, and centered around the client. Based on the evaluation of Housing First alignment at an operational level, Focus Strategies developed action plans in collaboration with the Housing Commission and the individual shelter providers to mitigate or address any issues that were identified. Focus Strategies reviewed all program elements that are impacted by a Housing First approach, including that the program model was a low barrier and is designed to ensure unsheltered people with high barriers to accessing programs and services are not denied entry. That the program model specifies that the shelters must offer essential services to program participants, including residential services and staffing, meals, showers, wash stations, restrooms, laundry, security, and storage. Temporary bridge operators are expected to maintain a secure, safe, and healthful environment. Supportive services are required at the shelters, such as housing navigation services, the opportunities to be referred to county, state, and federal programs, as well as nonprofits and social service agencies. Programs are also expected to use shelter diversion strategies. Shelter sites are required to provide access to health services provided directly by the City or County of San Diego. They must have adequate staffing with appropriate ongoing training for service delivery. And they each must have a designated point of contact who is available at all times to the San Diego Police Department and host a minimum of 2 community meetings involving community participation and an opportunity to provide feedback from the community. These shelters are intended to serve as a bridge to housing. In designing the model, the City of San Diego and the Housing Commission identified the coordinated entry system operated by the Regional Task Force as the primary mechanism by which clients will be connected to a housing program. All the operators are required to participate in the coordinated entry system, as well as document homeless eligibility using the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's homeless definition and third-party verification procedure. They are also required to use the coordinated entry system standardized vulnerability assessment tool in the screening, referral, and admission processes, and participate in housing navigation, case conferencing, and other integral components of the coordinated entry system. Lisa will now walk you through the recommendations and related action items.
Focus strategies found that overall operational practices from all three providers, Alpha Project, Veterans Village of San Diego, and Father Joe's Villages, were in strong alignment with the Bridge Shelter Model and Housing First principles. They did identify a small number of items that they recommended the Housing Commission and each provider consider how to address. I'd like to take a moment and recognize the providers and their willingness to work together on these action items. As part of the development of Phase 2 recommendations, focus strategies, the Housing Commission and the providers held conference calls to review the items focus strategies identified and determine the appropriate action steps to take to quickly address any issues. We truly appreciate the continued commitment to ongoing successful program development that the providers have consistently demonstrated. The goal of the Bridge Shelters is to serve households who are literally homeless. The data analysis showed that almost all households entering the shelters during the analysis period were either unsheltered or coming from another shelter. However, a few were identified as coming from other situations, such as motels, transitional housing, and a few from permanent supportive housing. Focus strategies acknowledge that in some cases, persons can be coming from these locations that would otherwise be on the street if not for the intervention of the Bridge Shelters. However, they wanted to ensure that all efforts for diversion are being made. This issue was identified across all three shelters, and all operators expressed their strong focus on diversion conversations as part of their intake process. However, if a conversation is successful, that does not show up in the data because the person never enters the Bridge Shelter, so no client record is created. The Housing Commission has committed to working with the providers and the Regional Task Force to identify a way for this data to be tracked so the providers can better demonstrate their efforts. In addition, all three providers have committed to holding additional training for staff that focuses on diversion conversations at intake and on other potential interventions that may meet people's needs. Staff training was an item that was noted across all three of the shelters. In some cases, staff reported that they had not received specialized training. However, more generally, staff expressed that they could benefit from increased training to help them deal with challenging issues they encounter while serving their residents. More training in areas such as trauma-informed care, de-escalation, communication, motivational interviewing, and conflict resolution were noted as desired. Shelter operators did express some surprise to this finding and noted that their standard training that is required by their operator contracts is provided to staff as part of their onboarding process. However, all providers were open to the desire for enhanced training and the need to provide more tools to staff who are carrying out challenging work. All three providers have in-house training programs and have agreed to work together to leverage their combined resources to identify needed trainings and develop ongoing training schedules. In addition, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Technical Assistance Team and the Regional Task Force are working with Housing Commission staff to identify and provide needed training as well. An item noted for Alpha Project's single adult shelter was access to employment services and opportunities. Focus Strategies recommended that Alpha Project explore how to create some stronger linkages with employment and training programs in the community. Alpha Project had already identified the need for these services and has scheduled a job fair where several employers that they have engaged will be in attendance. In addition, they plan to continue to develop new relationships with employers and also provide employment opportunities for residents through the Take Back the Streets and Wheels for Change programs, as well as other internal opportunities. For the shelters operated by Alpha Project and VVSD, transportation was noted as a challenge. Focus Strategies recommended that these providers look into ways to leverage resources to obtain bus passes or other forms of transportation for their residents. Alpha Project has secured some funding for bus passes and provides transportation through their outreach vans in collaboration with other providers. VVSD is working on developing funding sources for bus passes as well as leveraging collaborations with other providers. The need for clarification around length of stay was also noted as an issue at the Alpha Project and VVSD sites. It appeared that some staff and clients were under the impression that 120 days was the maximum length of stay as opposed to an average length of stay. Alpha and VVSD will hold briefings with their staff and review the policies and procedures to ensure staff are effectively communicating with clients on length of stay. Outside of the prior living situation and staff training items previously identified, Focus Strategies identified a few items specific to the Shelter for Families with Children and Single Women, which is operated by Father Joe's Villages. Focus Strategies, held with residents and their staff survey, there was some expression that rules in the shelter are not always consistently enforced. However, Focus Strategies specifically noted that they did not independently observe any instances of inconsistent rules enforcement. They recommended that shelter leadership conduct some listening sessions with residents and line staff to further identify what the issues are related to enforcement of rules. Father Joe's has committed to reviewing these concerns and evaluating their policies and procedures related to client quality of care to assess their strengths and weaknesses. They've also created a guidebook and checklist and updated policy and procedures for all staff to enforce consistency across staffing, role implementation, and quality of care. Linkages to services was noted to be potentially challenging. Father Joe's is unique in that the shelter is located adjacent to their campus, where a rich array of voluntary services are available. This includes therapeutic child care, health care, employment services, and many others. However, during the evaluator site visit, staff expressed frustration that many clients do not avail themselves of these services. To address this challenge, Father Joe's will be providing enhanced referral training for the Bridge Shelter staff so they may better communicate the opportunities for services to their clients. Finally, an issue with ongoing maintenance and operations of the showers was noted when residents were surveyed. This was an issue that Father Joe's, the City, and the Housing Commission were already aware of, and it has been resolved. Additional service days were added to the service and maintenance schedule provided by United Sanitation Services, and any issues are quickly addressed. In addition, Father Joe's ensures that if showers do close for maintenance, shower facilities on the main campus are made available. Housing Commission compliance staff, in collaboration with the Homeless Housing Innovations Department, will review the action items for each operator from Phase 2 of the evaluation. Our staff will monitor and ensure that action items are met within the agreed-upon timelines. In addition, compliance staff will continue with their regular monitoring for contract compliance and alignment with Housing First principles. Focus Strategies will be presenting the full evaluation to the Housing Authority of the City of San Diego as an informational report, which is currently scheduled for August 7, 2018. Following input from the Housing Authority, recommendations from the first and second phase will be reviewed and incorporated into the Bridge Shelter model and the operator contracts as appropriate. The updated temporary Bridge Shelter operator contracts will be presented to this board on September 7th and to the Housing Authority of the City of San Diego on September 18th. That concludes our presentation. We're available to answer any questions you may have and hear your feedback and direction.
Thank you. What I'm hearing is, it's indicative of the population and the issue that we're dealing with and the complexities associated with it. This is not an easy deal. And clearly, we're going to have to pivot along the way. We expected that we would have to pivot along the way and make, changes to our approach and our expectations of how many people we could actually move into permanent housing. And so, you know, the staff along with the operators are on the ground running this. You know, I accept what you you're bringing forward to us, and clearly we're going to have to accept that our expectations for what we're going to be able to achieve out of this thing and how we go about it is going to have to change along the way. Mr. Herrera, did you want to add anything to from what you heard today?
The only thing I'd really like to add is that in addition to the more than 100 individuals that have been housed as a direct result of this initiative, it's really brought to a forefront not only within the city but in the community the immediacy in attention and investments we need to make in establishing our information infrastructure. And those discussions have been really going on theoretically for quite some time, and this brought to front and center in practice exactly where we need to make improvements on. So there's been not only the benefits of additional resources for our homeless individuals and advancing the city's efforts to try to provide for the unsheltered population, but more so in developing a culture across the region of collaboration and addressing specific issues within our regional approach and being able to take specific action items to address those deficiencies.
Clearly, I think we can call that a success.
That is a success.
Yeah, that's a success. And I think that other regions would look to us as leading on that front.
Yeah, as Mr. Gentry alluded to, we've had over 15 different municipalities visit San Diego to learn more about what we're doing here. So there is no cavalry coming to save the day. We are definitely at the forefront of developing innovative solutions to this issue.
Yeah, Mr. Gentry.
Just a couple of clarifying points. When the Housing Commission first put together this course of action at the request of City Council last winter, we initially said we should not include any goals at all to figure out what we're doing here. And because of pressure from City Hall, we came up with goals anyway. And those goals were heavily based on numbers in the Regional Task Force on the Homeless database, which have turned out to be in woeful need of reevaluation. And the RTFH knows that. They figured that out, too. They're going through now trying to weed through that information and purge it of bad data. So I think what I said a while ago on another issue, that one thing's worse than no data, and that's bad data. We established goals based on bad data, then we've got to account for why we didn't make our goals, and the goals are not achievable in the first place. So I think what this gets to, too, is that the nature of these shelters, are they going to be bridge shelters? Are they going to be holding areas? If they're going to be a bridge shelter, then this is a fairly new endeavor anywhere in the country. And so we're committed to making it work, but it means that we're going to need to figure it out as we go. And I think getting Focus Strategies, which is a national expert in here, to help advise us on this was the right thing to do. And I think going forward, it's going to help us get a lot of people off the street. You heard that, 250 already, approximately, folks have been housed. That's a pretty good accomplishment. However, we're also recognizing that we may need to extend the goal on staying to 120 days. That's going to limit the number of new people coming into these shelters. It's going to have implications on outflow. It's going to have implications on cost, which the city itself is going to have to deal with upcoming. As Mr. Herrera said, there is no cavalry coming around the bend to save us from this problem, and there are no magic answers here.
Commissioners, any thoughts? Commissioner Benvenuto?
Thank you for that presentation. We should absolutely be celebrating the small victories. How are the 177 that have exited to permanent housing doing?
I believe we've seen actually two recycle out of the 242 that have exited to housing, recidivize back. So that's fairly low numbers. We're really trying to do some digging in, and it basically takes client by client right now to do that. Because as Mr. Gentry mentioned, RTFH is doing a lot of work on their homeless management information system to make sort of dashboard-style reporting a lot more available to us than it is now. But so far, we've seen two revised back that we're aware of from permanent housing. Permanent housing does not necessarily mean that they were subsidized in their own name. So permanent housing is a permanent residence. Permanent subsidized housing, about 60% of those exited to permanent housing were exited with subsidy. So some of them attained leases or permanent housing in their own name or with families.
That's That's wonderful. Very positive. And you referenced the task force. That was my next question. How is the relationship with the task force, particularly as they are operating the coordinated entry system?
So Tamara and I spend a lot of time talking about things, and we spend a lot of time with her data analytics team and with our senior program analysts working through data. They're currently working on identifying a new homeless management information system, which they're planning on bringing online in the fall. And from the demonstrations that we've seen, we're very excited about a more seamless, more user-friendly process, and also a much more enhanced data dashboards. One of the things that we've talked about a lot is that you can't just change the information system where you're warehousing data. You also have to work on how you're using that. So the HUD Technical Assistance Team is working with the Commission and with the Regional Task Force on Homelessness in a collaboration to relook at the coordinated entry system right now and how to make that a less complex and more streamlined process.
Great. And you're confident that this will be a positive tool for you going forward, where your input's being taken?
Very much so, yes. Yeah, I jumped right in with both feet on that, and they let me in the door.
That's great. That's always a good start, being invited to the table. And then, you know, it just keeps bringing up the point that the permanent supportive housing we have available is going to continue to be the big question mark at the end of the bridge. And I just it would be a missed opportunity if I didn't jump in and say that, you know, Sandag has an effective vacancy rate, they say right now, of 0.5% in our region. Mm-hmm. So what that means for us going forward is if we can't keep bringing up that we've got to find that solution to get these units built, you know, we'll have missed the end goal here. So I think this is all very positive. I just have to continue to make the plug that we've got to continue building, and the Commission's done a wonderful job of that. I just hope that our partners around the region and around the state continue to find ways to help us fund those solutions. Thank you, guys.
Let's not lose sight of what our own study said, right? Somewhere between 150,000 and 200,000 units short in this region. Commissioners, any other thoughts, comments on what we heard today? Appreciate your input. We expect that we're going to have to continue to modify as we go along the way. We're in new territory, and we can't look to anybody that say that they actually nailed it and did it all right and that we could learn from it. We're at the point of the spear there, and so appreciate what you're doing, Mr. Herrera. Appreciate what you're doing. Very difficult issue to deal with, obviously. A huge societal problem. And in order to be able to resolve it, we're going to have to continue to innovate and come up with new solutions on how to do it and use a multi-prong approach. So I appreciate what you are doing. Thanks a lot, staff, for that. Commissioners, that's the items on the agenda for today. Any last-minute comments before we conclude? Hearing none, the meeting's adjourned.